This morning, we are very pleased to have with us Alan Klaus. He is here to share with us data that was collected during the Church Membership Initiative Project. You heard Dr. Berry refer to this project last week when he was with us. And they asked for time to share this important data with us here at the seminary. So we welcome to our campus, Alan Klaus.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Everybody here okay?
Yeah.
In the back, you can hear okay? Thank you. What I'm going to do today is visit with you about the Church Membership Initiative. At the end of the presentation, I'll be giving you a name and address where you can write if you'd like more documentation about this. I'm going to cover basically four topics. Some information about the decline in membership, information about the project activities and resources, some findings that have been developed out of this specifically for congregations, and then talk a little bit about what congregations might be able to utilize. We're not going to be presenting conclusions and answers. That's one of the things that people often misunderstand about what we do when we make these presentations. It really is our purpose to present to you what we have found, and then hopefully we can have some discussion, some opportunity for questions. It helps me understand what the issues are that you feel are important in this. This project started with a very simple piece of information, and that is that from 1950 to 1970, the number of Lutherans in the United States grew by about 3 million people. This is the total baptized membership of all Lutheran congregations in all of the various Lutheran church bodies. However, between 1970 and 1990, there was a decline of 500,000 Lutherans. Currently, the Missouri Synod is experiencing a fairly flat membership situation from year to year, 1,000 up, 1,000 down. As you think about that and read about it, you should also bear in mind that the birth rate now in the United States is as high as it was during the baby boomer days. During the baby boomer days, this is what was happening with Lutheran membership. During the current high birth rate, this is what's happening. So the first fact was that there's a loss of the number of Lutherans in the United States over a 20-year period of 500,000 folks. The second issue that came up is that we discovered that George Gallup had a different head count than the Lutheran church bodies had. When George Gallup talked about the number of Lutherans in the United States, he came up with a figure of roughly 12 million people. We call this the professing Lutherans. If a person goes to a hospital and they say, "What is your faith?" they would say Lutheran. We found that there are roughly 12 million people in the United States who identify themselves as Lutheran, and a little over 8 million on baptized membership of Lutheran church rosters. What that means then is that fully one-third of Lutherans in the United States are not members of a congregation anywhere. Those two facts plus the third one, which is that annually for the last quite a few years, specifically this is data out of 1990, but this has been going on for quite some time, there are 250,000 people who are what we call backdoor losses out of Lutheran congregations. These are not transfers to another congregation or anything like that. These are straight backdoor losses. So these three facts led to some discussions with the presidents of Missouri Synod, the ELCA, and the Wisconsin Synod, and out of that, a study was created. And the study has this objective: to set in motion forces which will result in increases in the number of baptized members of Lutheran congregations. The study had an advisory group made up of people from the ELCA, the Missouri Synod, and the Wisconsin Synod participating in observer status. For the Missouri Synod, it was Lyle Muller of the Evangelism Department and John Schulke. We had people from these various backgrounds in the church participating on our advisory committee. The sources of information are quite tremendous, voluminous. We did an extensive literature search covering these topics. Church growth here is, in the narrow sense, the Fuller Seminary concept of church growth. Cross-cultural ministries, current research, over 150 titles. And we did not do any sort of theological evaluations on any of these various studies. We contacted a significant number of experts. Some of these are names you'll recognize: George Barna, Carl George, George Gallup, Lauren Mead, Lyle Schaller, Kenan Callahan. And most importantly, though, we spent quite a bit of time with parish pastors. We sponsored 11 research studies done by a wide variety of people. We spent over 2 years' worth of effort. We've listened to over 5,000 people in probably 250 to 300 congregations. An example of one of the studies was an interview of clergy in 9 locations around the country, ELCA, Missouri, and Wisconsin Synod clergy. This is kind of interesting. We put them together in the same room. And they discovered that they were all concerned about the same issues. They discovered that they could share with each other comments and what works and what doesn't work and learn from each other. Now, in these meetings, we knew people who were specifically invited from congregations which were experiencing growth in mission and ministry and those which were not. I knew who these people were, but we did not introduce them as such. And what that allowed us to do is listen to their comments in light of their congregation's experience. What we did is we showed the graphs that I showed you earlier and then simply said to them, what do you think are the sources of this situation and what might be done about it? And then frantically wrote for 4 hours as these people in groups of 8 to 10 people talked to us about congregation life. Our most important source of information is simply listening. Listening to clergy, listening to laity, spending time in congregations, attending conferences and workshops, lots of presentations, and people like yourself. I'm hopeful that we'll have time for questions. I'll make sure that we have some time for questions and comments. But also, I'll be available here afterward. My plane doesn't leave till tomorrow morning, and so if folks would like to continue with this discussion, we'd be happy to do that. Essentially, what I'm giving you is highlights out of a 5-hour workshop that we put on for congregation people. Our first major finding is that this membership situation is a congregation issue. Simple statement. Yet it represents what's called a paradigm change for a lot of officialdom. You see, most of the church denominations, when they approach the decline in their membership, approach it from a different perspective. They approach it from the perspective of, we should do a sociological, psychological, theological study of what's going on, figure out what some of the answers are, and then pass that down the line of our structure so that we can help congregations understand how to solve this issue. Our reading of the information is just the opposite. Our reading of this information is that this is a congregation issue. It begins and ends with the congregation. There are two insights that are related to this that help guide the shaping of this study. The first is the insight that a congregation which wants to grow might grow. Now, this statement, fairly simple, becomes more important when you pump it up against the next one, which is that a congregation that does not want to grow will not grow. Now, this is where people are often expressed surprise. They say, I just can't believe that a congregation would not want to grow. And so what's the relevance of this comment? After visiting many hundreds of congregations, we've arrived at the conclusion that many congregations have a primary mission of ministry to their current membership. It's how they see themselves. And most importantly, we've also discovered that these congregations will verbalize an interest in ministry beyond their current membership, but they are firmly unwilling to make any of the changes which that ministry may seem to require. And I'll give you some examples of how that plays itself out. Maybe you've heard some of these statements. Adding a second worship service will destroy our congregation. Anybody heard that? This is a congregation which is in ministry to its current membership. Or another one. Adding members will cause a loss of the personal relationship between the pastor and a member. This actually is a true statement. People who deal in such things tell us that a given individual can really only have a one-to-one, in-depth personal relationship with no more than 75 to 100 folks at a time. And so what that means is that a congregation that views its purpose as having a personal one-on-one relationship between each member and the parish pastor will never have more than 200 or 300 baptized members. It's just not possible. Especially if they say that all of us who are members of this congregation must have this relationship with our one pastor. These are congregations which are in ministry to their current membership. They will say to us, anyone is welcome to join. Well, it actually goes on to say, anyone is welcome to join us the way we do things now. This is a congregation which is focusing on its current membership. Or they'll say, our community is declining. So of course, why wouldn't we decline? We experience this in rural settings. We experience it in changed neighborhood settings. Or the last statement they usually say to us is, we're interested in spiritual growth, not numerical growth. Any of you heard all these statements? Sound familiar? What we'd like to point out is that there is a difference between what people say and what they do. What we'd like to point out, our data suggests, is that the behavior of the congregation is much more important than what they say in their mission statement, in their constitution, or on their bulletins. These congregations will describe themselves as warm and friendly places. And you know what? They really are. When we visit these congregations, we use a technique that's called mystery shopping. This is a technique that's used for people who want to find out whether bank tellers are doing the job that they're supposed to do or people in jewelry stores. And so what we do is we visit the congregation, normally as an individual visitor or as a couple, and we'll say, we'll just walk in and see what happens. And in these congregations which are focusing on their current membership, we find that these people are very close to each other. When you stand in the narthex and watch these people interact with each other, you discover a warm and friendly place where they are close to each other but closed to non-members. You will spend that whole time in that congregation and nobody will say a word to you. It's been interesting to me as I've encountered some pastors who have retired recently from congregations and visiting other congregations, and they all say the same thing to us. It's amazing how quickly you discover what kind of congregation that you're in. These congregations have another important characteristic, and that is that they have only one entry point. They have only one entry point. Think of a congregation's monthly calendar that comes out with the newsletter or the list of activities that's listed in the weekly bulletin. And as you go down that list of activities in a congregation that's focused on its current membership and you ask yourself, who's invited to these activities? Who are these activities intended for? What do these activities address? And what you discover is committee meetings, and friendship groups and social activities which are constructed of, by, and for their current members. So we find that these congregations really only have one entry point. That entry point is the Sunday morning worship service, which is always delivered with one style of worship. These are congregations which are primarily in ministry to their current membership. Another interesting factor when we visit these congregations is that almost all of them are experiencing stability or declining baptized membership, declining resources, and a whole list of situations like that. Now please understand, we're talking about research here, and we're talking about group data. There are always exceptions to everything I'm going to talk about today, but the exceptions are few and far between. What we're trying to describe for you is the overall results of all of that research that I mentioned to you earlier. What's interesting, when we visit with the leaders of these congregations and ask what they expect in the future, is that 86% of them expect to grow, to maintain or grow. And yet when they ask the next question, how is that going to happen, they have no response at all and really just sit there. Now, to give you some specific examples, a study was done by a former district president of Missouri Synod, Elder Meyer. Some of you will be familiar with him. Elder did a study, in fact it's not quite done yet, where he was intending to visit rural congregations which are experiencing growth in mission and ministry and those which were not, and try to understand the differences, and then try to use the learnings from one type of congregation to help the others. A reasonable study to do. He's been in now 70 congregations in rural America, and rural means rural agribusiness. This does not mean rural New England or rural California, which is not at all like rural Nebraska, Iowa, Ohio. Rural agribusiness is what we're talking about here. One of his first findings is that fewer than 5% of these congregations have any plan to grow whatever. Fewer than 5% of these congregations see themselves as growing. They are mostly in declining communities, and those declining community factors, like economic power is leaving, maybe the school district is closing the school, things are going on out there that are declining in the community. And so it becomes an acceptable attitude in the congregation to expect decline. And it's almost like, why would you think anything else? Elder has found that these members seem unable to change this self-defeating attitude. He spends 5 or 6 days with these congregations, goes off and writes a report, and then comes back to them a couple weeks later and visits with the leadership of those congregations. And this is what he discovers. He finds fairly significantly low levels of self-esteem on the part of these congregations and upon the clergy in those congregations. A major finding he has is that new pastors are not trained for these rural settings. I'm a city kid. In fact, I'm kind of glad to be back on this campus. I spent many a pleasurable Friday and Saturday evening on the hardwood over there at the field house, playing basketball for Lutheran High School North and preliminary games for seminary's games. City kid. I don't have any understanding of rural life. What Elder points out is that lots of folks don't understand the importance of coffee. If you're in a rural ministry situation, you got to understand what coffee is all about. And you have to understand that 3 or 4 mornings a week, you're going to have to go to coffee. If you're going to be in rural ministry, you have to understand that you have to be at the Friday night football game, high school football game, even if you hate football. It's important to understand that if you lock your car, you are an outsider. In fact, in one congregation, a pastor described how people left their keys in the car, and he couldn't understand, how can you leave your keys in the car? And these people said, well, everybody knows what car I drive, and somebody else driving that car isn't going to get out of the county. Where do you learn that stuff? Here or out there? The rural setting has some special characteristics to it, and these attitudes are an important issue connected with them. Now, Elder did find congregations which are growing, and in a little while I'll talk about that. But it's important for us to understand, in the light of the objectives of this project, that 95% of congregations in rural America, rural agricultural America, do not expect to grow. Now, as we were listening to Elder talk about this stuff, we began to think to ourselves, gee, that sounds like a lot of suburban congregations we've been in, and urban congregations. So we commissioned a study by the Alban Institute researchers to go into declining membership congregations. Now, these are congregations which are in communities which are experiencing growth in population and not experiencing change in socioeconomic or cultural status. These are situations which should be experiencing some growth based on the way things happened 20, 30 years ago. So these congregations were characterized with the following ways. They have kind of a poor me atmosphere. They'll talk about themselves, we're just this or we're just that. They're unaware of their strengths. This was very interesting. The researchers spent several days in the congregation collecting information, interviewing people, go back, write some reports, and then come back and visit with the congregations. And they start with, here are your strengths. And these people would express surprise. Almost, you know, the kids use this phrase sometimes, blown away by the fact that somebody would observe that they had some strengths. These congregations are not involved in their local context. And this is particularly true in congregations which are involved with changed economic, changed socioeconomic settings. They are focused within, they see themselves as a family. And by here we mean the term family in terms of how do you get to be a member of a family? How do you get to be a member of a family? Born in, married in. And so these congregations are not the kinds of places that people find their way into. They have the same few long-term key leaders, and their congregation membership is getting older. I want to give you a specific example from a specific congregation of what we mean by being focused on your current membership. These are subtle things, and this is one example that's not an answer. What it is an illustration of an attitude. Now picture this, a congregation that 20 or 30 years ago had a large parochial school and full services, maybe 600 or 700 people in worship on a typical week, and now is in a neighborhood that has completely changed. 3 miles in all directions are African American folks. And what we have is a congregation of white Lutheran people getting older. Now, into this worship setting on a Sunday morning comes a 15-year-old black young man. Think about that. By himself. Think about that. By himself into a different culture and sits down. And what he's given is the worship folder, the announcements for the week, a pamphlet about families, the sheet with the intro at the gradual epistle gospel on it, the sausage supper dinner sign-up thing, and of course the hymnal. And here he stands. Are you aware that we skip sections in this hymnal when we go through the liturgy? Are you aware that we do that? Are you aware that we don't tell anybody we're going to do that? And so here sits this young man with all this paper and this stuff with boxes and oars and all kind of stuff, and he's lost. And so what happened in this situation is exactly what people in these congregations say should happen. Well, somebody should help that young man, and somebody did. A real nice lady slid over, very quiet, unobtrusively, pointed out what page he's supposed to be on. Now let's think about that young man again. He's lost. Now he's publicly lost. Maybe he's feeling a little stupid. Now he's publicly that way. When we mystery shop these congregations and we always sit in the back to watch what happens, when adults go through this, I'll tell you what they do. And they're done. No evangelism program in the world is going to be successful when the first 5 minutes into the worship service, this is what people experience. And each one program door knocking. None of that is going to be successful if 5 minutes into the service the people are lost and confused, can't find their way around, and all kinds of things like that. Now, sometimes people say, well, what you're doing is being critical of the liturgy here, and we are not. Or sometimes people say, well, all I have to do is fix up our Sunday morning worship folder. That's not it at all. What we're trying to say here is that there is a difference in attitude of a congregation that plays itself out in lots of little ways which are invisible to the members. I'll give you another example. There's a fellow in Pittsburgh who calls himself the churchman. And what he does is he visits congregations on Sunday, and then he has a radio program on Monday, and he rates them from 1 to 4 bells based on how things went. Well, he was in Milwaukee because a group had asked him to come in and visit the congregations in that area, and the network news people caught up with this guy on Sunday morning, and he's standing outside this church, and they asked, well, tell us about that church, that congregation. He says, well, I went to the front door, and it was locked. And apparently the congregation has decided that people should enter from the rear where the parking lot is. Sensible thing. No sign. So I went around to the back and discovered there are 5 entrances. None of them marked which way to come into. So I picked a door and I found I was in a hallway and had no idea how to get to the sanctuary. And when I finally found my way to the sanctuary, I needed to use the bathroom, had no idea where that was. Another example of things which are invisible to current members. See, current members don't even think about that stuff, particularly when they're focused on ministry to themselves, when their definition of who they are and what they are is ministry to their current membership. And on and on and on, the stories, I've got hundreds of stories I could tell you, and I'm going to have to cut it off because we don't have time to get into more of them. Another interesting thing that we've done is we've visited with some of these 4 million people who used to be Lutheran. And what we found is that those who joined another congregation, not Lutheran, still harbor negative feelings about the experience which caused them to leave. I'll give you some examples. We use what's called focus group research. This is a process where people sit around on a table and there's an interviewer there and he talks to them about the situation, and we're behind the one-way glass, one-way mirrors. And a nice, pleasant conversation is going on, 20 minutes, and then the interviewer says, tell me about what caused you to cease to be a Lutheran. And the whole atmosphere in the room changed. And people start grabbing hold of the armchairs, and lower lips start quivering, and jugglers start coming out. And one lady says, 10 years ago, I said, 10 years ago, 10 years ago. And this physiological reaction still happens. 10 years ago, my 19-year-old brother committed suicide. The message at the sermon was, this boy's in hell, don't let this happen to you. 39 people became former Lutheran. A lady described how she had visited her grown daughter in a far-off city and attended communion at another Lutheran congregation, not the same church body. That congregation sent a communion card back to the home congregation so they could update their communion records. The pastor went to the lady and chastised her for attending communion at another church body, wrote a very damaging letter to the daughter, and told the son, who was supposed to officiate Sunday morning as an elder, you're not going to participate in this worship, in participating as an elder until you get your family straightened out. 15 people became former Lutheran. A gentleman who was visiting a Lutheran congregation, he's a Lutheran, I sometimes use the phrase to describe him, Minnesota Lutheran, sort of in the Garrison Keillor sense of the term, you know, been a Lutheran all of his life. Takes his 9-year-old son, single parent, to the altar, take communion. Pastor asks, are you a member of our congregation? No, I'm not. I'm sorry, I can't commune you today. On the way down the steps, the little boy says, Daddy, does this mean we can't have supper with Jesus? Not in this congregation. And the stories go on and on and on and on about people who were not ministered to. When we ask people why they dropped out, they say it's because I had a personal experience in my life that the church couldn't minister to. And you say to yourself, I don't understand that at all. If we're supposed to be here to be able to minister to people. But you know, the divorce rate among Lutherans is about 10% that of the general population. Well, I should clarify, when we go to Lutherans and ask, have you been divorced? The rate of people who say yes is about 10% that of the general population. Does that mean that Lutherans don't get divorced? Or does that mean when that happens, they wind up dropping out? These are all ministry situations which cause people to separate themselves from the church. Another interesting factor we discovered is that these people would answer questions about what might help them come back. And some of you who are familiar with George Barna's work, will know that there are quite a number of books that he's written on how to reach the dropouts. And one of the questions they always ask is, what might it take for you to come back? And the data is always better preaching, good loyalty to the Bible, should have Sunday school for the children, worship should be meaningful to me, and several other things. But when you listen to the people react to that, here's what they really say. Going back to the church, well, gee. Well, the preaching should be good. Yeah, that sounds right. What else? Well, it'd be nice if people stuck to the Bible. You tell the difference? There's no motivation here. These people have been hurt and offended. And frankly, we saw no evidence that these people were going to come back on their own to give the church, quote, another chance. One of the reasons we explored this is that in order to try and deal with the objective of the project, remember, all of this was designed around the objective of the project, well, maybe we could try and reach these 4 million people who are not members of Lutheran congregations. And our conclusion was that that's probably not a good way to go, because these people have been so offended, they're not going to come in on their own. Hopefully, when they do come in, when they do have a life experience that's negative to them, they will come to a Lutheran congregation and we'll be able to minister to them. We asked these people some more questions. We asked them, do you pray? 41% of these people indicate that they pray daily. 19% indicate that they pray weekly. I'd love to do this same question among our church people. I wonder if it would be any different. How important is religion in your life? 71% of these people indicate that it's important to be, that religion is important, but they choose not to participate in a congregation. Now, this is an important point. Some of you are familiar with Loren Mead's book, Once and Future Church. And in there, he talks about a change in society from a Christendom model to what he describes as a post-Christendom model. We tend to term it as being from a change from a churched culture to an unchurched culture. And this is one of the significant differences. In a churched culture, if you are a person of faith, you will participate in a congregation because that's what you do. There can be a lot of reasons. I do it because it's my responsibility. I do it because I enjoy it and love it and get a lot out of it. I do it because Grandpa's buried 20 feet out the door there, and I could not bear to not be in church knowing he's buried out there. In an unchurched culture, the reaction is different. In an unchurched culture, large segments of our society, probably 50 to 100 million people in our society, separate the concept of faith from the concept of participation in a congregation. And for many of us, that's a very difficult thing to understand, yet is a reality in their minds. We asked people, what happened when you became unchurched? 50% said that this happened when they moved. 50% said it did not happen when they moved. Now, one of the things that's always interesting is people say, well, you know, you got half of these people who have moved, and when I was with AAL, people used to say to me, you know, AAL and Lutheran Brotherhood probably have better databases than anybody, and maybe you could help us keep track of these folks who move, and that could all be done. But then we discovered something else. When we visited with pastors in communities that receive transfers, Southern California, Arizona, Nevada, Florida, Georgia, people who these retirement areas, and we asked them about that, what they just said to us is that these people say to us when they moved down from the Midwest, they wanted to retire from work and from the wars of the congregation. When we talk to people in these host, in these source places, Minnesota, Wisconsin, places like that, Michigan, what we ran into a few congregations. This was very interesting. In these congregations, they felt a ministry to these folks who were leaving. And they had a member or two who would be active at communicating with congregations in the new community that somebody has left and now come to that new new community. And guess what happens? Nothing. These people are very frustrated because we discovered that these congregations, these host communities, don't do anything with these leads. And why should they? If you're a congregation that's focused on your current membership, you will not have time. Your members will not feel the need. They're happy to welcome folks who show up, but beyond that, nothing happens. I'm flipping through a lot of other data on this to get to the next point. Okay, next major finding. So that finding, a lot of congregations are in ministry to their current membership. We estimate that 80% of Missouri Synod congregations are in this category of being in mission to their current membership. We estimate that half of these congregations are firmly in ministry to their current membership. And firmly in ministry to their current membership means that perhaps the pastor or the lay leaders see this as the purpose of their congregation and aren't interested in anything outside of that way of thinking things. What I'm going to talk about next, they find very difficult. These congregations sometimes talk about a small group of people holding the membership hostage. We hear that a fair amount. We find in some congregations the pastor is interested in getting beyond the current membership, but the laity aren't, and so it won't happen. Or the laity are and the pastor's not, so it won't happen. Or the laity and the pastor are, but the office staff and the custodial staff aren't. So you have to understand that one of your biggest sources of new members is the person who answers the phone. The way you answer the phone makes a big difference in whether or not people will come to visit. The way your building is cleaned will make a big difference. George, what's his name? Kroc. Ray Kroc? McDonald's? Ray Kroc. Used to always say that a mother with young children does not come to McDonald's because the hamburgers are good. It comes because the bathrooms are clean. I can guarantee you that if you don't have a changing area, these young mothers won't come. If you have a nursery and it's staffed by a bunch of kids who are, you know, sort of there and are there late, these people don't want to put up with that. They won't come. If your facilities are dirty, people don't come. They'll come to visit, but they won't come back. These, are, again, are all things that are invisible to the current members, but very, very important to people beyond their current membership. Okay, our next major finding is that some congregations have a primary mission of ministry beyond their current membership. We estimate that about 20% of Missouri Synod congregations are in this category. Now, please understand, and please hear the word primary. We did not say exclusive. These congregations do pay attention, a lot of attention, to their current membership. It's just that it is not the focus of what they do. We found that these congregations are very, very dissimilar, except in a few key ways. One is that they are motivated to extend their ministry beyond their current membership. They seek local contextual answers. They use a tremendous variety of techniques. They are doing it on their own and largely going outside of the official church body for their resources. The pastors of these congregations spend their continuing education time at Leadership Network meetings, this group out of Tyler, Texas, at Ken and Callahan 12 Keys workshops, at Community Church of Joy, Phoenix, workshops, at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church workshops. This is where they go for their ideas, for their ways of understanding techniques that might be useful to them. These people are very interested in preserving Lutheran substance, but they also recognize the need for and value of speaking to the unchurched in the language of the unchurched. They seek to meet the needs of people, not the needs of the congregation. They actively seek new ministries. They are organized around mission, not around structure. Many of these congregations are doing away with the church council structure because they find the church councils and the related committees are in business to continue themselves, and they are not in business to be outreach-oriented. In fact, most of these congregations don't have an evangelism committee. Now, this is really interesting, and it's just come up in the last week or two, and I have to go back and collect some more data on this. But we've been in probably 80 or 90 congregations which are experiencing growth in mission and ministry, and I cannot recall one time where the evangelism committee was mentioned as doing great things. Because in these congregations, the whole congregation is evangelism. They are very involved in their local settings. These congregations create multiple entry points. I'll give you some examples. The one I give, I always give it, and people always say, you shouldn't give that. But I do because it's clear. This congregation is known on the community grapevine as the place to go when you want to find out how to potty train your children. People roll their eyes. Oh, gee, you guys are getting way off base here. Well, this congregation is in a community of a lot of new families with a lot of young and newborn children. And their philosophy is, what better time to teach the principles of Christian discipline than at this first opportunity for our young parents and children to have a major discipline issue? And so they are known on the community grapevine as a place to go to get help with this. And they don't do it for purposes of acquiring members. They do it as a community service. They do it as a ministry opportunity. Do you think they're growing? They're growing. Not because of the program, but because they're interested in helping people. These congregations have self-help programs. They have aerobics programs. They have, I'll give you another example. A congregation was getting ready to pay the bill to the recreation department for their basketball team. And they had this rule that you had to be a member of the congregation to be on the basketball team. I thought, wait a minute, that's crazy. Let's change that. And so now they have a rule that 20% of the people on a basketball team can't be members of the congregation. You see what happens? How your attitude changes, your mindset changes. Now it creates some kind of interesting theological sort of problems. In this particular situation, it was the basketball team, and their star was not a member, but he's kind of getting interested in this church stuff, but it's getting to the end of the season, and he was expressing interest in joining the church, but if he did, then they were going to miss their ratio. This is a live example, friends. This is a live example. Do you see the point I'm trying to make? These are not gimmicks and techniques. Lots of times people go out looking for the magic pill. What's the program that's going to work? It's not a program. It's not any of these examples that we've been giving you by themselves. What these examples are illustrations of mindsets. These congregations offer several worship options. I was thumbing through Luther's works the other night. Not really. I went into volume 53. Most of you are familiar with the liturgy and hymns volume. And came across the introduction to the German Mass, Martin Luther. Now there are three kinds of divine service or Mass. The first one is in Latin, which we had published earlier. We should continue to use Latin. In fact, if I could bring it to pass, also Greek and Hebrew, and if they were as familiar as Latin and had as many fine melodies and songs, we'd hold Mass, sing, and read on successive Sundays in four languages, German, Latin, Greek, and Hebrew. The second is a German Mass and order of worship, which is being arranged for the sake of the unlearned lay folk with which we are now concerned. The third kind of service should be a truly evangelical order and should not be held in a public place for all sorts of people, but for those who want to be Christians in earnest and who profess the gospel with hand and mouth, should sign their names and meet alone in a house somewhere to pray, to read, to baptize, to receive the sacrament and do other Christian works. As I was reading that, I couldn't help but think about Bill Hybels and Willow Creek. Now, I'm sure Bill didn't go to Martin Luther to get his philosophy. But you see, what we're finding in these congregations is that they're understanding that this is a communications issue. They view worship and liturgy as a communications issue. One of the criticisms of these congregations is people say, well, they're kingdom building. We've not found a single one of these congregations that's motivated for numerical growth. These congregations are all motivated to extend their ministry beyond their current membership. Numerical growth is a natural result. I've heard a lot of pastors of large congregations talk about their situation. Not once have we run into a single one who said our objective is to get to be big. They talk about the problems of managing big or larger, not even necessarily big. Congregations of 100 average weekly worship attendance talk about the importance of being in ministry beyond their current membership, getting to 200, 300, and 400. It creates some problems related to numbers. Now, one of the things we wanted to do is to verify whether or not our observations were shared by people in the church. And so we asked the district presidents, this was a meeting of district presidents of the Missouri Synod and bishops of the ELCA Synods. And we asked these people to name 4 congregations in your judicatory which are growing in mission and ministry, and then to list the characteristics of those congregations. And here's what they described. These are congregations where the pastor and the staff share a sense of vision. They have strong worship options, which normally meant having contemporary worship alongside of, not in place of, traditional worship. They describe a laity with vision. They describe a congregation meeting a broad spectrum of needs, even small congregations. This happens in some interesting ways. I'll give you some examples. If you're in a rural community, your community continues to exist until one important thing discontinues, and that's morning coffee. When the place for morning coffee ceases to exist, your community is now dead. And so in these kind of communities, elder would say to these congregations, well, why don't you provide the place for the morning coffee? In congregations which are focused on their current membership, guess what their response was? Who's going to pay for the coffee? Who's going to clean up the mess? Who's going to open the building? What about the liability? And on and on and on and on. In those congregations in that same setting which are focused beyond their membership, their response was, what a wonderful idea. Let's start it on Monday. Let's get the word out. We'll figure out the rest of it later. In these kinds of congregations, meaning a broad spectrum of needs, a person was going through a very difficult life change situation and reasoned, I'll bet there are other people in this community who are going through the same situation. What about if I put an ad in the personals column talking about a group and anybody's welcome to come? This was a situation where people are getting unemployed in one of these factory towns. Okay. Come to such and such a church at such and such a time and let's just visit together and minister to each other. Now it's interesting, they put that in the personals column, not the religion section. Everybody know why? Only church people read the religion section. Unchurched people do not. In fact, they don't even know where it is. Now, when that gets asked for in a congregation that's focused on its current membership, how is that question or mission opportunity handled? Well, we'll have to refer that to the stewardship committee. I'm sorry, to the evangelism committee to see if they want to sponsor it. And if they do, then we'll have to refer to the board of elders to make sure that that's going to be okay. And then the board of trustees has to pass on it. And then we have to be concerned about who's going to have a key and how are we going to have custodial staff and who's going to pay for all of the time. And on and on and on and on. In a congregation that's focused beyond its current membership, that's interested in finding ways to meet the needs in the community, the response is, well, let's send you to that community, to the committee that we have that will help you get this going. What we find in congregations which are focused beyond their current membership is very, very high levels of trust. trust for the laity, trust for the clergy, trust that they can handle ministry, witness within themselves. We find that these congregations seek ways to be in ministry beyond their current membership, and the district presidents told us they're generally not using church body programs. And we asked the district presidents, how do you feel about that? And they said, on the negative side, we are concerned about the theological underpinnings of some of these programs, but we also recognize that many of these programs are very good. We recognize that we cannot, as a church body, present programs that will meet the needs of all these various communities and all of these many different types of congregations. You see, in a church culture, congregations were pretty similar one to the next. Rural was always different from urban and suburban, but pretty similar from one to the next. In unchurched culture, what we're finding is that neighboring congregations need different kinds of programs. And what these growing congregations, congregations experiencing growth in mission and ministry, have discovered is that they want to get into the priesthood of all believers, discover what their current members can yield in ministry to their community, and do things customized to their local situation. Another little example. A congregation that's in ministry beyond its current membership has this as their worship folder. This is a liturgical folder. This is a liturgical service. The difference is that everything's printed. But a little bit more than that. The first hymn is four verses with a chorus after each verse. The first verse is printed and then the chorus, and then you turn the page and the second verse is printed. The secretary printed the chorus again. Because not everybody understands, you've got to turn back. You see what I'm talking about? A little thing that's invisible to the current members that's critical to people who are not in their current membership. How do you know about these things? You ask people. Two concluding stories for you. We were in a congregation talking about this stuff. Whole congregation's here. Gentleman sitting right there with tears in his eyes in front of all of his fellow members said that the most hurtful thing in his life is that his 30-year-old son, 37-year-old son, would not bring his 12-year-old grandson to church, Sunday school. And about 15, and this was just tearing him up, about 15 minutes later in this presentation, we were talking about worship style, and he said, the way we practice worship in this congregation is so meaningful to me, I can't understand why everybody wouldn't find it the same way. And therein lie his problem. He is insisting that everybody view the worship experience the way he views it. And he is trading off his son and his grandson in the process. We're not here to tell you, in fact, we're often accused of saying, we're opposed to traditional worship, or people should get rid of traditional worship styles and liturgies. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Every growing congregation we've been in uses traditional worship styles and liturgies for that segment that it reaches. They use alternative messages for other kinds of people. One of the largest Lutheran congregation is also the fastest growing Lutheran congregation. It is also the most highly criticized Lutheran congregation. Because people say that what they do in that congregation is practice shallow religion. Well, what they do, they have four worship services on Sunday morning. Each is a little different from the other. The first one is choir robes and organ music. And the fourth one, I think most of you would be uncomfortable in. It's a lot different. Now, their philosophy is we've got to get them in the door. And that's the first step. Our second step is to get people involved in prayer life. The third step is to get them involved in worship. And finally, we want to get them involved in mission. This congregation that is host so heavily criticized for practicing shallow Lutheranism has four mission festivals a year. How many mission festivals does the typical Lutheran congregation have? When we were there, they were commissioning 14 people at their own expense to go to Russia to help with ministry in that community. How many Lutheran congregations do that? This congregation has been in a live place for about 13 years. In that time, they've started 9 congregations, 5 in North America and 4 in other parts of the world, and a couple of these medical mission stations. Are these people practicing shallow Lutheranism? Not at all. These people are focused on ministry to people beyond their current membership. 3/4 of their 6,000 members are formerly unchurched people. 3/4 of them. Well, I've tried to condense a 4 or 5 hour workshop into the 50 minutes that we have, and it is 11:30 now, and so I was not able to get done with the basics, but I'll be here and would be happy to visit. I don't know what your schedule is, or if people want to stay around, I'm certainly able to do that.
What I think we'll do is we'll dismiss the assembly, but then if you have questions, you can stay.
Absolutely.
As you indicated a while, and answer any of those questions, and you're free to stay and ask those at this time. But we want to thank you for coming and sharing with us this morning.
Thank you.